Hey, everybody, welcome to Sports MacGuffins. It's number 29. And again, sorry for another week off, but hey, sometimes you just need those breathers, right? Even though it was the start of March Madness. What can I say? We're not good at our jobs. Hi, I'm Nick, and today I'm joined by Daryl.
Hello.
And I guess that's where we'll start. Actually, hold on. Before we get into March Madness, before we get into anything, I just want to throw this out there because I was just hanging out in my living room earlier tonight, and I was watching The Meg, which is a terrible movie about a shark, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Jason Statham, which is not someone I expect to go up against a shark. But I'm watching this movie, and it's pretty bad. I mean, it's good bad. Like, it's fun bad. Not what I would call an Oscar nod in any way, shape, or form. But during the movie, my wife and I were just talking on the couch, and she turned to me and she said, "Did you know this about this song?" Now, I'm going to say what it is. But you may know this. If you know it and you haven't told me, Daryl, I'm going to be upset with you. Do you remember the song "Alive" by Pearl Jam?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm still alive, baby. You know that one?
Yeah. It's Even Flow. Sorry, Even Flow is the one I like to sing nonsense lyrics to.
Mm-hmm. I confuse them. I confuse that one. I even started singing Jeremy to myself. Like, I combine the lyrics, but apparently Alive is a song about a mother who has lost. Okay. It's a mother and a son. The son is finding out from the mom that the dad that he always thought was his dad was actually his stepfather. And the mother feeling some weird deal happening, and she has an incestuous night with the son because he looks so much like his biological father, and the mother really needed that.
Right.
Yeah. And Eddie Vedder is like, yeah, that song is completely true, except for that second verse where they do it. He's like, it's based on true stuff. Apparently, he actually... Hey, thank you, Peter. I appreciate it.
The 90s were a hell of a time, everybody.
Peter Hayes. Yeah, so apparently, Alive by Pearl Jam is about an incestuous relationship between a mother and a son. And apparently, it's a part one of a three-parter with two other songs. One that I can't remember the name of, where he goes nuts and kills a bunch of people. Followed by another one where he goes to prison and awaits his execution.
Mm-hmm. Hey, mm-hmm. It was good times back in the 90s when you had fun songs like that.
Yeah.
Songs like Rape Me and...
Oh, my God.
This was what we were listening to on the radio.
What was that song by Live that was about the mother who died in childbirth?
Is that Thunder Crashes or whatever?
Lightning Crashes. Lightning Crashes.
Lightning Crashes.
I always confuse it with Thunder Rolls.
Yeah.
Thank you to Peter Hayes who showed up for the live stream. And good night, buddy. Don't forget, if you're listening to this after the fact, you can watch the live streams Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Central Daylight Savings Time right now. twitch.tv/Schwarzenegger. I'll leave a link to it below.
I was wondering why it was only 2 a.m. for Peter, but that's because we go to Daylight Savings Time earlier.
Yeah, that's an odd thing, too. But hey, I am in broadcast mode, but also because... It would be confusing if I was just like, oh, hey, thanks, Peter. And like we had a show be released later that people were like, who the fuck's Peter? Like, why is Nick talking to himself and this imaginary Peter person?
All right. Nick, so what if, yeah, Peter, yeah, Nick, quite the twist. I don't even exist either.
Dude, wouldn't that be the greatest? No, well, it would suck for me, but wouldn't that be a great twist? No one else existed?
Yeah.
I mean,
Nick, you have to let it go, Nick. It wasn't your fault.
Daryl's been dead this whole time, and it'd be funny if it was like every time I just stopped talking, it's like, what do you think about that? Just silence. Super awkward. Okay, so I wanted to start with that. Watching The Meg, weird movie, led to a discussion about a song. Weird song. So it kind of ruined that song for me. It also ruined Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam really messed up. Okay, let's talk about the tournament. March Madness is going on right now.
That tournament. Okay.
Yeah, we can talk about the NIT in a little bit. I hate the logo for the NIT, by the way. Something weird about it. It feels wrong, right? Because it reminds me of fall. Because it's like, what is it? It's like a basketball and a pumpkin and like a little a square that's like turned 45 degrees. No. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Like a pumpkin. That's an apple.
It's an apple?
Because they have the tournament in the Big Apple, New York City, baby.
Oh, my God. It is an apple.
You are an idiot, Nick.
Well, what can you do? Oh, you know what? I was picturing the ball as a pumpkin. I did really well.
Yes, New York City, the big pumpkin.
The big pumpkin. Okay, so we'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to start with the brackets. So we did our own tournament challenge.
Right.
And so far, Daryl, I'm feeling pretty good because I'm sitting at number 6 out of 21.
All right.
Where are you? How are you doing?
Let's see.
Oh, where you're tied for 7th.
Tied for what?
7th. You're tied for 7th.
Oh, okay. I'm actually doing not bad.
You're tied with 5 other people for 7th place.
Well, you know.
4 other people.
Well, I'm not last, at least.
That's true. Yeah, somebody who didn't fill out their bracket is dead last. But I want to know, where do your final 4 sit right now? Are they still in the bracket? That is like the major measuring stick at this point in time. Are your final 4 still in it?
Are my final 4 still in it? No.
Okay. How many
3
do you have left?
Are still left.
Okay, that's still really good. I have 4 left. It's lucky. Very, very lucky. I'll tell you what. Normally, I'm out one of those by now. So this is a good ride for me this year. Granted, it's not the ride I wanted because 1 year, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get it. If you don't know this, because it's the sports show for everybody, if you fill out a bracket and it is 100%, you don't miss a single thing, you win like a few million dollars, right? There's a guy who's willing to pay out. If assuming you actually fill it out, like
yeah, it's Warren Buffett online. Is willing to give Warren you Buffett. $1 billion.
A billion?
Oh. $1 billion.
1 year, it's going to be me. 1 year, it's going to be me.
And he does that because he knows it's like practically impossible.
It is impossible. Nobody's ever done it.
It's like winning the lottery, but you only get one shot at it.
It's
instead of picking 6 numbers, you're picking 60 numbers.
Yeah, dude, it's a very specific thing. And I honestly couldn't even tell you what the closest finish is at this point. But let's talk about the actual tournament now. We'll talk about... So the thing about this tournament is March Madness is home of like these great finishes, these lower seeds that come in and... you get seeds all the way up to 16, by the way. But last year was the first time a 16 seed ever beat a 1. And it was actually Virginia who lost. And they came in and had a little bit of a scare early, you felt like, against Gardner-Webb in the first half of that game. Which is funny to me because it's like, can you imagine if that happened 2 years in a row? The only team to ever lose to a 16 seed? Comes in
twice.
And has, yeah, does it twice and twice in a row. Like, you got to think that they're out for vengeance in this one. But it's like I said, like, these tournaments are known for these big finishes where these higher seeded teams, or I guess in this case, lower seeded teams, whatever, the higher numbers, come in and basically try to make a play for it. They're the Cinderella story, right? They're the ones that are going to push their way to the end, even though they have no business being there. They're what Daryl likes to call his least favorite teams.
Yeah.
Daryl is not a fan of Cinderella stories.
No. They should be in their place. There's a reason why they're in the Backwater Athletic Conference, Nick. It's because they're not good enough.
I mean, it's
tournament
true.
Isn't for underdogs. It's for the big dogs. Woo, woo!
Every year, the woo, woo! But the thing about it is, the madness of March is that any team can win. I mean... they say that, but I mean, like,
can win
the first week. Yeah, they can win a game and then they can go to hell. But this year there hasn't been a lot of upsets, right? Or not like a big time, like big time upsets. There's like what? Oregon and UC Irvine is probably like the two that stick out because they ended up facing each other in the next round. So it's like two of these Cinderella stories have to like face each other right out of the gate. And it's like, well, that's the other thing that sucks about Cinderella stories is they often end to other Cinderella stories. And that's not interesting, right? Because you want the Cinderella to face the big dog.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That one year when two Cinderellas made it into the Final Four, but they played each other.
Kind of a letdown. Although, honestly, here's the problem with the Cinderellas. And I don't know if we've actually had it yet. We've probably come close. Is if you have one on the one side of the bracket and one on the other side of the bracket, you got two Cinderellas going head-to-head in the final, congratulations, nobody cares.
Yeah, who gives a crap?
It's a great story as long as it's them against like a blue blood or one of these teams that's really like outstanding. But if it's just them against another team, meh.
Yeah. So no one would have paid attention to Old Dominion versus Vermont during the season.
Right, exactly. People are rooting for matchups that you would never want to see in the regular season. In fact, it's one of the things that people say are boring about basketball is regular season games like those. So this past week, I'd say, there were a few good games, but it wasn't, to me, it wasn't the overall fun that we've had in the past. And I feel like we have these couple, right? We have a couple of years of craziness, and then there's like one year where it's like, okay, the better slotted team here is going to win. And maybe later down the line, we'll see a little bit of parity between some of these teams. Like, because this week we have twos and threes going up against each other, ones and fours. So, I mean, we're going to see a lot more of that now, which I think kind of evens the playing field this week.
I think all one, twos, and threes got into the Sweet 16.
I think you're right. Yeah, it looks that way. there's a five, there's a 12. But yeah, ones, twos, and threes all made it. I was a little bit surprised by the Duke-UCF game. I don't know if you saw that one. And UCF, somebody was talking to me at work, and they were telling me that they're like, man, Duke just gets bailed out again. I was like, well, did they? Dead Meat 2400 showing up in the chat says, fuck Duke, so it's appropriate time. But I will say this about Duke is there was that play where they were trying to review whether or not the ball had made contact with the rim or not. And in the game, they said it had, and they reset the shot clock, which gave UCF another opportunity to go and score. And they did. So they went up by four at that point. On the replay, to me, and I didn't have the sound on of the game. I was watching it just like casually off to the side. To me, it looked like it never hit it. So the fact that they didn't reverse that call, and I think it was under 2 minutes, that they would have had the opportunity to go back and change that, I think is a miracle in itself. If you're not a fan of the big dogs getting big calls, then you should be happy with that. Now, I will say this about UCF. They had two great looks at the basket. One was like off the a fingertip floater that went off the backboard, bounced out. They were able to get the rebound and have the putback real fast, also off the backboard, right outside of the right onto the front of the rim, and like kind of went around for a second, but it never caught, right? So it just rolled off the side. And it's like, whoo, Duke breathes a sigh of relief. But if you're UCF, I feel bad for those kids, but at the same time, it's like, big dog. Woo-hoo.
Yep.
And it was a good game. It was one of the fun games of the weekend. Because a lot of the other ones were kind of snooze fests. Wofford and Kentucky was close for a little while, which was kind of surprising. Kentucky and Duke, both teams, not that you didn't expect to really have trouble. I'll tell you what, though. Our boy Dead Meat 2400 here in the chat on the live stream saying that Gonzaga for the win. And they look good, man. Their offense is firing in all cylinders. I'm excited to see them play Florida State, another team that probably going to have to score a bunch to keep up. But at this point, I don't know who I would pick to win. Now, my bracket says Purdue, but that's because I'm an idiot. I was like, oh, you know what? I just have a feeling. And I went with it. I didn't go with any research. I didn't do any of that. Like, Duke, I think, is probably one of the ones to win. Gonzaga is a good pick. Any of the one seeds, basically, at this point. Texas Tech is great, although they're going up against Michigan. They're the two best defensive teams in the NCAA. And I don't know, man. What were we going to say?
Speaking of being an idiot, for some reason I put Marquette in the Elite Eight.
Oh, my God.
What a really dumb pick that was. I have no idea what I was thinking. I don't remember making that pick. Maybe I was, you know, dehydrated at the time.
Maybe. North Carolina is another great pick. They go up against Auburn, who had that surprising win over Kansas. And if you're watching the live stream, if you're listening to this later, Open Cypher, thank you for the follow. Dude, I was so surprised. Well, not really. Okay. I was surprised in that I thought Kansas would have a little bit, like they would go deeper than just the first two games. But I had seen enough of them all year long to know that this isn't your typical Kansas team, right?
Yeah. They struggled against the Longhorns, which is a sign of being a bad team.
They struggled against them three times.
Three times.
It doesn't bode well.
But it's against the ultimate playdown team, the Longhorns. Yeah, yeah. And so I was like, for some reason, I also picked them to go to the Elite Eight. But I think I did that more so just to jinx them.
Well, you know what? Second. That's the other thing, too, when it comes to filling out a bracket. You can go with the jinx pick. You don't necessarily have to pick who you think is actually going to win. You can pick them to screw them over, which I can appreciate. Deadmeat2400 says that he had to yell at his friend who goes to Marquette for them taking an L. You know what?
Murray State. Although Murray State has that player who's really good.
Yeah, that kid was really good. Morant. And then he was decimated by Florida State in the next round. But, you know, what can you do?
What can you do?
What can you do? So, the continuation of the bracket coming up on Thursday, Friday, as we go down to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight this weekend. I don't know, man. I'm feeling pretty good about my Final Four. I picked Duke, Gonzaga, and then Purdue and Kentucky. And the only one I don't feel good about is Purdue.
Well, Nick, you'll be happy to know that I also picked Purdue to make the Final Four.
Okay, good. Well, that makes me feel a little bit better.
So you can act. Wait, did I pick them to go? Oh, apparently I picked them to go to the championship game.
Oh my God, you're riding this wave with me. Who wins for you?
I picked Duke to win.
Okay, I had Purdue and Duke, and for some reason I picked Purdue to win. I don't know what I was thinking. We'll see what happens.
We can rule this bracket, you and I.
Don't think we can. I don't know. Like I said, like I love the tournament. It's one of my favorite times of the year. But for some reason, after the Thursday, Friday, I just didn't have that oomph, that solidified feeling of the tournament that I usually get. Or like, there's years when it's like the better seeds move on. You feel it. Like those are the years that I don't like. I enjoy the tournament, but it's not the end all be all for me. It's like when those crazy upsets are happening in the first couple of rounds, it gets me really primed. And then later on, when everything kind of evens out and goes back to normal, I enjoy that. So, all right, Daryl. Well, this is a weird one for me because I do not follow. Like, the tournament's one thing, and there's people who like basketball, and there's people who don't like basketball. But then there's the lower levels of basketball, the ones where you're like, I have to be a real basketball fan to go and find this. We're talking about the NIT. What was the other one? There's one more. The CBI?
There's the CBI, the College Basketball Invitational.
Yeah. We found out about that a few years ago because we're Longhorns fans, and the Longhorns got an invite to it. We all thought, like, what? Is this a joke? Are they insulting us by inviting us to this thing? But the Longhorns are still alive in the NIT, barely. Like, I don't know how they are. There's two games happening tonight and two more games happening tomorrow. So tonight, it's, let's see, Wichita State and Indiana, and then right now it's Creighton and TCU. TCU is up 52-41 at the time of this recording. Tomorrow, it's going to be number 4, Colorado, at number 2, Texas, and then Lipscomb at NC State tomorrow. They're both on at the same time. What the hell is that? I get those might just be placeholder times. And it's not something I care about. But because a team that I watch is there, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
And it's literally, like, right now I have the TCU-Creighton game on in the background because, one, it's a sports show, and, two, because it's basketball. I want to have something on, and also the Rockets are getting blown out by the Bucks, and the fucking Spurs blew it earlier tonight.
Yep.
Daryl and I have already commiserated on that. Yes. Now,
here we come. Bring on the Warriors.
You know what? We're going to face them at some point. You might as well just get it out of the way.
I mean, you're going to have to beat them at some point. Might as well do it in the first round.
Yeah, man. During your warm-up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, also, they're warming up, so it's actually kind of a good time to get them.
Honestly, I'd rather face them out the gate than later, especially since they're not hitting on all cylinders. I'd rather hit them, like, as long as they don't fire on all cylinders within the next six games or whatever.
Even last year, the Spurs were able to, you know, they could have very easily made that a six-game series.
Yeah, but they didn't.
No, they didn't. They got one game. Gentleman's sweep.
Gentleman's sweep. Yeah.
All right, Nick. So the... Oh, yeah. Oh, and Texas actually gets to host a third-round game because the number one seed in the NIT, Alabama, lost in the first round.
That was a surprise, too.
And then they promptly fired their coach, Avery Johnson.
Oh, no, Avery. He played for the Spurs a long time ago.
Yes. They called him the Little General.
The Little General.
Because he's not very tall.
Kind of like an endearing insult. No, I'm just kidding.
It's because David Robinson was the admiral. So he was
right. And he ran the point, so kind of makes sense. But yeah, I like, we're not the Dallas Stars. Well, I don't know. Dead Meat 2400 is asking if we're Dallas Stars fans. I don't think so. I don't really have.
I haven't been in a while.
No. I actually was rooting for the... I love Las Vegas. That was a cool story, and I love that town, and I love that. I love the story of that team that first year. That was so cool.
Nick loves the Las Vegas Strip. He doesn't care about the people there.
There are people there?
They could all be mutants with transplanted brains.
I'd
love the town.
But you know what? I'm not going to treat those people badly, or those creatures, whatever they may be. All right. Well, in that case, yeah, so the NIT, it's happening.
Yeah, it used to be a bigger deal, Nick, back in the old days, because Texas did win the NIT back in 78. Of course, back in the old days, Nick, the tournament was only 32 teams. And also, they only allowed one at-large pick per conference.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
So, there were actually good teams left over after the NCAA tournament. So back in the old days, NIT was a big deal.
That's true.
If you had like two really good teams in a conference, but then a dark horse ended up winning the conference tournament, then you could have a really good team, like even a top 25 team not make the tournament.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing about the NIT is I feel like it can oftentimes be the lead into a great run for a team and a coach. Mm-hmm. And like we've seen it a few times happen. I can't think of one in recent memory, but could this be Texas's moment?
Could they get something?
Could they get something? I mean, look, I'm going to be real honest with you. I didn't expect them to win a single game in the NIT. That's just me being honest. The fact that they've won two, and honestly, I don't know how, because the second game went to overtime and could very well easily have gone to double overtime. You win two games, you get a little bit of momentum for the next year, even if you don't win game three. Let's just say you don't have a colossal collapse of Longhorn proportions, right? You can build off of this, because one thing I know for sure is that they're not getting rid of Shaka Smart.
Right.
Because who are they going to get, and you still got to pay out his contract?
I pay out his contract. Got to pay out the contract of the dude you're hiring.
Yeah, yeah.
Assuming you're not getting some scrub.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got to pay his salary. So it can end up costing like $20 million.
Well, Avery Johnson's available.
Yeah, we could get Avery Johnson.
No, let's not do that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. He did so well at the Nets.
Yeah. Yeah, he sure did, didn't he? Okay, so that does it for the NIT. Let's talk a little bit about the NBA itself. We're coming down to the end of the season. There's just a few games left. And, dude, the West is always a crazy place to be, isn't it? But this year in particular, the last four teams, the last four teams are within two games of one another. Literally, it's like the Clippers are in fifth. They're 45-30. The Jazz are 44-30. They're in sixth. In seventh is the Thunder, 43-31. And San Antonio in eighth, 43-32. Of course, they've lost three of their last four. And then beyond that, the Houston Rockets and the Portland Trailblazers are only two games ahead of that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, and honestly, there could be a switch at the top as well, because the Nuggets and the Warriors are like neck and neck. They're a half game apart right now. The Nuggets are a half game back. But the problem is the Warriors actually have like the fourth easiest schedule remaining, I think. So yeah. Like they're going to probably coast into the playoffs. Although they did lose the other night.
Yeah, and I think they have the head-to-head tiebreaker.
I believe they do as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are happening in the West. I don't think anybody's giving anyone outside of the Warriors a chance. Nobody's talking about the Nuggets. Like, people are talking about the fact that the Nuggets are neck and neck with the Warriors, but I don't know if anyone is giving the Nuggets a solid shot to beat the Warriors. I've not heard one word about it.
No, and the Rockets seem to have taken a step back from last year.
Well, I knew they did as soon as they lost Trevor Ariza, dude. He's a huge He's a huge boon for that defense, and without him, they wouldn't got Carmelo Anthony, and that worked out great.
Yeah.
The East, meanwhile, is not quite as interesting. Like, between 1 and 2, it's 4 games difference. Then between 2 and 3, it's 4.5 games difference. Then 2 games difference after that, and then a game and a half after that. Then 6 games. The last team in right now in the East has a losing record. Because it wouldn't be the East without that. Now, the upside... go ahead.
Every once in a while, it looks like, oh, maybe the East is going to... Maybe it's going to balance out, but then always there's a year like this. Where there's a plus 10 game difference between the 8th seed in the West and the 8th seed in the East.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Totally, dude. Here's the thing. The top teams in the East, the top two in particular... I have a great shot. Maybe the Sixers. They're always kind of like, maybe? We'll see. But probably not.
Yeah, the Jimmy Butler thing is mixed results.
But the Bucks are dealing with some injuries right now.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think could... I mean, it's the worst possible time of year. I mean, obviously, any time of year is bad for an injury, but right before the playoffs, their guard, Malcolm Brogdon, has plantar fascia tear, and Nikola Mirotic... fractured his left thumb, but I guess they were able to get one of the dudes who came in for Mirotic, and he's been shooting better than 50% from the field. So they've been able to weather the damage, but we'll see if they're able to continue with it, right?
Yeah, and considering they have to, and considering that their first round matchup is going to not be difficult.
Yeah.
With the Orlando Magic, you know, they have a little bit of time, extra time to get everything back.
That's true. That is true. Now, it's not set in stone. The Miami Heat earlier today when I looked were in the eighth slot. So those two are going to vie for that final position. And the Hornets, because the Hornets got a win tonight. God damn it. I'll tell you what, man, and you know this, if you have a team that you root for, there are a couple of teams out there that there is one guy who is a your team killer. And that is 100% true. There are guys who literally are gunning for your team, and they have only eyes for your team, and they are waiting just for you. Now, Kemba Walker's a great player. I'm not going to say anything else against him about that. But he always guns for the Spurs. Always. He always has his best games against the Spurs. Steven Jackson was a player who also used to have great games against the Spurs.
Bonzi Wells, a complete nobody.
Yeah,
against the Spurs, he almost knocked us out of the first round of the playoffs.
There's just certain guys.
And then even when he was like a end of the bench player, end of the rotation player, he would still come in against the Spurs and have big games.
J.J. Barea is another one. Jason Terry. Oh, God, Jason Terry. He was a Spurs killer. But that's the thing. Think about it for a second. We're biased because we're Spurs fans. But if you think about your team for any amount of time, and you think about a team they go up against that they lose to, you know, fairly regularly or have trouble with, there's one guy on that team who always plays well against them. It is just a fact of basketball.
Even if they're just a scrub. Shooter. Mm-hmm. Just a kick out player who you kick the ball out to, who just for some reason against your team just hits all those threes just to make you miserable.
And not even that, sometimes they still take over the game. You're like, what the hell are you doing? This guy never touches the ball like that. And he's able to go and create his own shot sometimes, which is something that some of those guys are never known for. It's just Sorry, we're dealing with a little bit of a heavy sigh here, but basically the West is set. Unless there's a colossal collapse by the Jazz, the Thunder, or the Spurs, those three teams are in. But right now, the top five have been solidified. They are guaranteed playoff spots.
And it's not like the Sacramento Kings are on fire right now.
No.
So
I think one more loss may eliminate them, actually.
Because there's seven games left.
And they're
one more loss and then another Spurs win would eliminate them.
Well, if the Thunder continue to lose, though.
So they're 7-7.
It just means that the Spurs are safe at this point.
The Thunder would, the Kings would basically have to win out and the Thunder would have to lose out. It's the only way the Kings can jump them.
Basically. Same with the Jazz.
Yeah.
Although the Spurs Jazz would, sorry.
So the Spurs are basically if they win one more game and the Kings lose a game, they're in. The Jazz actually have 8 games left. So if they lost all their games, then they too could fall out.
We're talking
same
colossal collapses here.
Actually, no, wait. The Clippers are already in because... Oh, they probably have a tiebreaker. Right.
They secured it, yeah. They did. It is secured. ESPN says it's secured. We're good.
Oh, okay, because they have one more game than the Jazz. So they've won. Okay. So they only have 7 games left. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm excited for the playoffs because I honestly think the West is going to be a lot of fun. The East will be fun maybe the second round. I would say in the conference finals for sure. Assuming that the two right teams get there. Yeah,
the Detroit Pistons against the Utah Jazz in the finals, baby. It's going to happen.
No, I don't think so. God, please no. Please, God, no. Please, no. No.
That would be great. Fouling Andre Drummond. It'll be fun. Blake Griffin. Everyone likes Blake Griffin, Nick.
I forgot he was still alive. All right. Well, let's talk about other people that we know are still alive, but that are just calling it quits. We're talking NFL. We're talking Rob Gronkowski. He's hanging it up, Daryl. 9 years with the New England Patriots. He's decided to call it. I was going to say call it a life. He's going to call it a career.
Call it a life. Yeah,
that's it. He's hanging up
He's just going to ride off into the sunset, never to be seen again.
Ride off literally into the sunset.
Ride off into a tornado.
I mean, he could ride a tornado. I wouldn't put it past him. Gronkowski is one of those guys who's over the top and fun. And while you hated him because you didn't have him on your team, he's one of the greatest tight ends to play the game.
I'll concede that.
I'm not going to say he's the best because I don't. The intangible, like, here's the thing about a tight end position. They're not just receivers, but you feel like Gronk himself filled out so much of that aspect of it, right? Like, he could have been optioned as a wide receiver, basically.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in fantasy football would draft him as a tight end before some wide receivers, before some running backs. People went nuts for him, and he's a great player. He had 79 touchdown receptions his entire time as a Patriots. He was a second-round draft pick in 2010, and he had 10 or more touchdown receptions in 5 seasons. That's the most by a tight end in NFL history. He played in 115 regular season games. Remember, he had a couple of injury issues here and there. His arm kind of bothered him.
And by bothered him, you mean was broken.
Yes, it was broken a lot. Literally. A lot. Broken. Yes, it was. He played 16.
That might cause a problem.
he played in 16 playoff games. He had 81 catches for 1,163 yards and 12 touchdowns. Those are all records for a tight end. This guy is a poster for what you would want a tight end to be. With the exception of probably how he is as a person.
Yeah, despite being a very large man-child, but...
He's a very large man-child, but if you've seen his family, they're all man-children. They're a very strange group, a very strange family. He's a strange guy. He acted like a kid. He'd come out, you know, like, he'd show up in random stuff, like commercials and things like that, right? That you wouldn't expect him to show up in.
He showed up at WrestleMania.
He showed up at WrestleMania. But I mean, he did say leading up to the Super Bowl that, you know, it's taken its toll on him over the years, and it's true. Like, the guy was a physical player. He went out there and competed all the time. Did it while hurt. He did it for his team. He did it for his teammates, and he did it for his city of Boston.
Several back issues as well.
Back issues. I think he had like a knee issue at some point. He had the broken arm. I mean, he was a great player. And again, I think you probably love to hate him. But I don't really hear a lot of people talking smack about him, right?
Yeah.
People don't like
Brady. Not like a locker room cancer or anything like those sort of labels that get thrown around.
No, he was never anything bad to his team, I would say, ever. He was never one of the guys that you heard, like, anything about. Like, not even a hint about. Like, you knew he was a fucking weirdo. And you knew that he was a bit, flamboyant's not the right word, but, you know, he had that kind of personality where he was out there, like, very, like, over the top and, like, just, like, the life of the party type guy. And he's calling it quits. And you know what? I'm happy for him. And I'm happy for us. I'm happy for us because
we got
maybe
a Super Bowl quality offense. So now not a Super Bowl quality defense. So we kind of don't want to face a big, hard to tackle defensive end. I mean, a tight end.
I mean, we'll see what happens, but he's done. We'll see. How New England deals with him leaving. Obviously, everybody had nothing but great things to say about him. Brady says, for as big and physical as he is a gentle, kind man. So Gronk calls it quits.
Oh, Nick, one thing about Gronk at WrestleMania. Okay, so they were doing a battle royale. Or battle royal, sorry. They're doing a battle royal, and... one of the wrestlers, like, gets in Rob Gronkowski's face, and they, like, you know, jaw jack at each other. And then Rob Gronkowski is supposed to jump over the railing and, like, beat him up, right? It's part of the match. But the security person didn't know that, and he was like, no, sir, you need to stay in your seat. It was, like, keeping him from getting into the ring.
No.
And then, like, someone, like, walked over, was like, let him in. She didn't know who he was, so she was like, no, you have to stay there, sir. Right?
That's got to be super embarrassing, right?
Yeah. Later on, you could see her, like, laughing at herself, but she But at the time, she almost ruined the whole thing.
Man, what if she hadn't, like, what if no one had come over and enabled that to actually happen? And she's like, no.
No. And she was a lady, too. It's not like Rob Gronkowski can throw her to the ground or
right, yeah, because then it's like, ooh, no, we can't do,
sharp, sat, like, shocking news out of
WrestleMania.
Rob Gronkowski mall security woman so he can run into the ring.
that's awesome. The other big story coming out of the NFL, the NFL owners they planned a late night of replay discussion. So what that means is there were a couple of calls earlier this year that were questionable in terms of what are called non-calls, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is when something that is a foul, or like, you know, if you watch in slow motion, it ends up being a foul, but it's a missed call, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or in some instances where a guy's like, you know what? I'm going to let him play through and doesn't call it.
Yeah.
There's no
swallow
way.
The whistle. Is
right, right. Swallowing the whistle meaning like, oh, this looks like it could be iffy, but it's the last 2 minutes of the game, so I'm going to let it go. That happens in games sometimes. It happens a lot in basketball. Well, unless you're... Depends. In the playoffs, it does in particular. But
not in college basketball, it doesn't happen.
Oh, God, but... No. So earlier Tuesday evening, the proposal apparently would allow non-calls for defensive pass interference to be reviewed in the final 2 minutes of a game. And that one sounds like it has a very good chance of being approved. And that's all based off of... one call that went against the Saints in the NFC Championship.
That was a call that didn't happen at all, Nick.
It was a call that ceased to exist. And it was definitely pass interference, by the way.
The great robbery of New Orleans.
It was a great robbery. I honestly think if you'd sent New Orleans, we would have had a good game in the goddamn Super Bowl.
Yeah. And actually, Nick, the AAF, the Alliance of American Football, they actually do have a system where they have a official that's just in the booth. Mm-hmm. And if something egregious like that happens, they can like ring down and go, hey.
Overturn it.
No, that was, they can overturn.
I don't, why haven't we instituted this in the NFL yet? Is that because they don't believe they can put everything on one guy in the booth?
I guess.
But that doesn't make, but the guys on the field are like one guy on the field. Like, a guy who's in position to actually make a call on the field is still being put with that kind of pressure. Like, at least in the booth, you have the added benefit of, like, a slow-motion replay. And, like, you could actually get on the horn to NFL headquarters and be like, that looks good. And come back down and be like, knock it off.
Mm-hmm.
So, according to this, coaches met for nearly 3 hours on Monday to discuss the issue, spurred by encouragement from two of their most veteran members, Bill Belichick and Andy Reid. It would basically allow some non-calls for pass interference to be reviewed. Obviously, it corrects that controversial call that happened to the Saints last year. However, at this point, ownership support for any change to replay remains unclear. A Tuesday's debate could end in some sort of resolution, or it could spill into Wednesday morning. So that's currently happening right now. We're recording this Tuesday evening. And thank you, Ty Sanchez, for watching the live stream, joining us, and for giving us a follow. Anyway, so there's little question that the coaches are united in their hope for some sort of action in response to the NFC Championship game, which is interesting. I'm glad that all of them are kind of on board. So, but some coaches differ on the details, and John Gruden, who, while he is a punching bag because of the way he's handled the Oakland Raiders this past year and kind of drug them down into the dirt, he did bring in the Steelers receiver. So good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Congrats, but you still lost some other great pieces around you. He thinks that a frame-by-frame analysis of pass interference calls kind of slowing the game down, which is a huge problem, I agree. It's something that we're running into, and it's something that we've seen with baseball. Baseball is one of those sports that's very slow, and as a result has I would say, a less interested audience, but it's also a slower paced game to begin with.
Yeah.
College
baseball this year, they have instituted a video review.
Yeah.
You get one thing per game.
I mean, that makes sense.
This is the first year they're doing this.
Gruden says, though, that he says that the existing replay official who exists there, sits in the press box of stadiums, could alert referees to clear and obvious mistakes. It's like you said, in the AAF, they are already doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, this is a no-brainer. At the very least, just institute this. On this level, of this policy, you can totally say, hey, that looks shady to me. I don't think it was right. Let's overturn it.
Yeah, and actually in the AAF, I'm not sure. I don't think it's happened yet.
They haven't used it
yet. So it's not like something that dominates the game.
Right.
It's just there just in case.
I see the reason for concern for the game to potentially slow down. And like you said, if it's not something that's being egregiously or overly used, then I think it's something that's at least worth looking into if it's something that gets the call right.
Yeah, and I think they even have Mike Piera doing it. And he talks about how he was a head official for the NFL. And he's a commentator now. But they have him do it. And he says, like, yeah, you know, he shows a lot of restraint. You know, there's some calls that he disagrees with, but he's like, you know, it's not egregious. So it's not a big detriment on the game. It's not like every single play is getting called down.
Gotcha.
So that could be something the NFL could think about. But
honestly, they should. They 100% should. There's a lot of things that they can turn around and work on. The other thing here is owners have already made two expected votes that they did earlier today. They made the permanent 2018 changes to the kickoff rule. That was just on a one-year basis, so they went ahead and instituted that going forward from what they did this past year. They also voted to eliminate all blindside blocks, not just those to the head and neck area, to increase safety on punts and other plays. They're trying to reduce injury, so I get what they're going for here, but how is it on the fault of the guy who comes up and puts a perfectly good block if the guy's head isn't on a swivel? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He has to, like, dive in front of him and hope that... I mean, then they can just jump over him.
It's the problem with the helmet-to-helmet rule, too, is, like, sometimes a guy who's doing the tackling is in the perfect position, and the guy who's getting tackled moves in such a way that his helmet moves into the other player's helmet or, like, comes into contact with it.
Yeah, or the defenseless receiver. Sometimes they have those routes where they are defenseless.
Yeah, if you're going to do that,
crossing routes.
If you're going to do that, you literally have to. You got to think about all aspects of the game. It can't just be on the defender. If there's a guy who's on the offensive side calling a play that puts his guy in danger and he knows it's putting him in danger, why is that play still allowed to exist by comparison?
Yeah. Like they put their own guy in a defenseless position.
At that point, I think it should be, like I said, it's tough because, again, we're trying to reduce injuries. We talked about all the problems that come of the injuries and the head injuries, which suck. But you can't change the game so much that it is no longer recognizable as the game that you once loved. Now, I don't say that to the point where change is good in some instances, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
you don't have players dying on the field like back in the 20s or whatever.
Let's see. Owners also approved a proposal that gives teams a choice in the timing of enforcement on a personal foul or unsportsmanlike conduct after a scoring play. The yardage can now be marked off either on the extra point or on the kickoff. I guess that could affect if they were going for two.
Yeah.
Or if like the game was going to expire. Like, time was up and you know, you wanted to give your team as good a shot as not getting them.
Yeah, that could be, like, if there's unsportsmanlike, and then, like, oh, it's for the kickoff, but if it's, like, the two-point conversion ends the game, like, what does it matter?
Right. Or, like, just a point after attempt.
Yeah.
In other voting on rules, the NFL tabled a proposal originally put forth by the Chiefs to guarantee each team a possession in overtime. I think that's a good idea because I think both offenses, because sometimes, let's be honest, your offense is just rolling and a defense that's normally great just has a down play. You shouldn't be penalized because your offense doesn't get to see the, but yeah, because of a flip of a coin. Thank you for finishing my thought for me. you want to know a really weird one, though?
What?
This is the weirdest one I've read. The league also defeated a proposal from the Denver Broncos to give teams a one-time option in the fourth quarter to have a 4th and 15 from their 35-yard line as an alternative to an onside kick.
Hmm. Something that they were doing in the AAF as well.
Are they really doing that?
Yeah, that's what they do. Well, in the AFF, they don't have onside kicks at all. They don't have any kickoffs at all. So instead, yeah, I think it's like a 4th and 14 or a 4th and 12 or something like that. And if you can convert that, then you get to keep the ball.
I like it. I think especially, it's fun.
Yeah. And also, since the way that they do kickoffs now, you can't get a running start anymore.
Exactly.
So it's really hard to get an offside kick. You just have to like kick it really hard and hope it bounces off the guy's chest. It's the only way you can get the ball now.
I don't think I've seen one since this new rule change. Like, one that's worked.
I think there was one, and I think that's what happened. They just like kicked it straight at the guy, and it bounced off his chest back at them.
You got to hope that he has bad hands and slow reflexes.
Yeah. So that could be something to consider. So that was what the Broncos threw out there.
Yeah. Now, their thing was like, it was a one-time option in the fourth quarter. So it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think it could kind of be fun.
Yeah, and I think the AAF also has restrictions on it. You can only do it if you're down so much and starting. Either you're down so much or at a certain time in the game.
Here's the other interesting thing about it, right, is what seems to be the ratings getter right now in the NFL? It's offense, right?
I guess for all you simpletons who aren't true
connoisseurs
of the game.
Look, I love me some defense, but I'm just saying the thing that drives the needle right now is a high-octane offense. What's more high-octane than a 4th and 15 as opposed to, an onside kick attempt that rarely ends well? People don't watch on... The kickoff is so boring now since the rule change. And again, it was all for safety, but think of how much has changed since then. How many times are they just kicking out at the back of the end zone? You don't get a lot of kickoff returns anymore.
And by the way, for a season that was marked by a lot of high-octane offenses like L.A. and Kansas City, look at the Super Bowl we got.
Oh, God. It was a defensive slugfest.
Yeah.
And people were upset.
Even all throughout the playoffs, there was not a lot of high-flying offense. So maybe it's like in basketball, right, with the Suns, where it was all high-octane offense in the season, but then it always slowed down.
Maybe.
Let's see. Any other fun rules here? Let's see.
I think we hit all of those, actually.
All right.
So, now... It's time. Well, thinking about those, I like a lot of those rule changes. We'll see if any of them are actually instituted or not.
Like, there's some people who are, like, super hardcore traditionalists. And, you know, I can see some of that. But I'm also of the mindset of, give it a shot. I'm willing to throw something out there, see what happens.
Well, you know, if they do what they did this past year and they're just like, oh, we'll give it a shot for a year. If it works, we'll keep it. If not, then, you know, we'll scratch it. But it's like, you know, people always talk about throwing something at the wall and seeing what sticks. Why the hell not?
Why the hell not? What are they going to do? They're going to lose money? They're not going to lose money.
Yeah. Your best opportunity to lose money came in the last couple of years with the Colin Kaepernick stuff. And also
they already got all the marks. They already got all the marks money. Yeet. They can do what they want.
Exactly.
That's what Vince McMahon does. He's already got their money.
All right.
Although now his TV ratings are down in the toilet, but you know what? Whatever.
He got his money, though. He's got his money. All right. It's time for Quick Hits. This is the segment where we go over the stranger side of sports, talk about the stuff that is happening in the world of sports that you normally probably wouldn't hear about. But maybe you did. So here's one, Daryl. We'll start with this Russian story.
Right.
Oh, my God. So a few weeks ago, the Siberian Power Show, which happened in Krasnoyarsk, Russia, they hosted a bodybuilding competition, dumpling eating contest, and dance battles. But in addition to that, they hosted a sports slapping tournament for men with, get this, 30,000 rubles at stake. Rubles, 30,000 rubles is 465 American dollars. man, that's that's an exchange rate. So, let's see here. It's exactly what it sounds like. Two dudes line up across from each other with a lectern in between them. They take turns slapping the shit out of each other until one concedes or is knocked out. Vasily Kamitsky won the grand prize after smacking several woefully underpowered foes. And basically, oh yeah, they just stand across from each other and slap the ever-living shit out of each other. There's also a highlight reel, which
and they have like a cut man here. It's very fun.
They have a cut man just to make sure. Here, I'm going to share this with you.
And there's even a referee.
If you're watching the live stream, by the way, you can. I'll put the link to the live stream below, but I'll do this here, and you can see some of the action.
Oh, we have a technical knockout here in the first round.
Oh my God! Yeah, they do.
He's out on his feet.
That's a big dude they had doing this too, man. A big old dude. Ooh. So, yeah, they just go back and forth and slap the shit out of you. Oh, man, I'll tell you what. The dude who won is huge. And if you haven't seen this, I highly recommend watching the thing we have linked in the episode.
I'm looking at him. He's got to weigh close to 300 pounds.
He's not, like, fat. No, he's a little chubby, but
he's got a big gut.
He's got a big gut.
But he's a solid dude. Like, just looking at his upper arms, you can tell this guy is strong.
Did I miss what happened here?
This is what they do in Russia. There's not a lot to do in the harsh winter months.
Okay, so they changed up the... Oh! Oh, man, sometimes those guys just lose their balance and fall. Oh, it's truly a thing of beauty. Oh, my God! Oh, that's so good, dude. Okay, well... I love Russians. Okay. Next
truly,
up.
Yeah, it's friendly people.
Truly, like a great people, right? And let's move on to this one. We're going to bounce around here a little bit because we're a little short on time. But Carlos Santana, no, not the one that you know and love who plays a guitar. Carlos Santana, who plays for the Philadelphia Phillies. Well, let's just say he was a little fed up with some of his teammates. And in particular, and the Phillies 10-2 loss to the Braves on the last weekend of the last season. It came about a week after they'd been eliminated from playoff contention. First baseman Carlos Santana is extremely frustrated by the apathetic youth on the team. So here's the anecdote. Carlos Santana felt like as a result of 9 consecutive games that were lost, they needed to send a message to his teammates, who he said had spent portions of the game against the Atlanta Braves playing video games in the clubhouse. Santana grabbed a bat, retreated to the room at Citizens Bank Park where the gaming took place, and smashed the TV to be ensure there would be no more Fortnite the final 2 days of the season. Santana told ESPN he saw a couple of players. He doesn't want to say names. They play video games during the game. We come and lose too many games. I feel they weren't worried about it. Weren't respecting their teammates or coaches or staff or the front office. It's not my personality, but I'm angry because I want to make it good. And you know what? It was also Fortnite. No, he didn't say that. But I'd like to believe that if it had been something like Anthem or, you know, Blackout and Call of Duty Black Ops 4, that he wouldn't have smashed the TV. He just would have turned it off.
All these darn millennials, Nick, with their Fortnites and their video games. Back in the old days, people used to gamble away their paychecks playing poker.
They used to drink in the clubhouse.
They used to drink in the clubhouse and spit tobacco and
eat hot dogs and probably have sex with women.
Women who weren't their wives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
American way.
That was the good old days. But now we got a bunch of snowflakes sprinkled all around the locker rooms here in this country, Nick. And the game's ruined. Back in the good old days, back when the men were men, the women were women, and the sheep were scared.
Who was the baseball player who on a flight drank like over 100 beers? Yeah, there it is. He drank 107 beers. Wade Boggs.
Oh, Wade Boggs. Yes. Okay. That's Andre the Giant-esque.
Well, they did an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia about it. He did not, like, apparently, like, the rumor had been that he drank, like, 64 beers on a plane, right? But he told Charlie Day in an episode that he drank 107 beers in a single day. Oh, God.
That's just a large amount of volume of liquid just by itself, much less the fact that it's alcoholic.
Well, you know, I'm going to guess that it was light beer.
So it's like 10-ounce cans, right? Assuming they're at least 10-ounce cans, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Or bottles.
So I guess, dude. Man.
Let's do run calc. 10 times 107. That's one. Let's see. And how many ounces are in a... Is it 64?
Yeah.
Ounces in a gallon. Oh, no, double that. 128.
All right. Oh, okay.
So divided by 128. So that's 8 1/3 gallons of beer.
Oh, my God. That's a lot of liquid.
That is a lot of liquid.
And this is something that's
Nick,
dehydrated.
That's the capacity of a lot of small cars as gas tanks.
Oh, God. You drink a gas tank.
He drank the gas tank of a Toyota Yaris worth of beer.
Oh, God. All right. Let's move on to this. It's quick hits. I'm not a fan of the UFC. I don't have anything against it. It's just not my cup of tea.
It's just a sport for barbarians to fight each other in front of a bunch of
bad
unwashed scum. Uncivilized scum. Yeah. But other than that, I don't have anything against the sport.
But I can't say I was particularly surprised by this story in which a UFC fighter left a post-fight interview to fight another fighter backstage. That headline alone is outstanding. So Jorge Masvidal, he won against Darren Till in London. He knocked him out in the second round. But while Masvidal was being interviewed by ESPN's Laura Sanko backstage, welterweight Leon Edwards started jawing at Masvidal. Edwards, ranked one spot ahead of Masvidal, had beaten Gunnar Nelson that night, and afterward called out Masvidal saying, he said, July, you'll get your ass kicked in July. So Masvidal left his interview and punched Edwards in the face a few times. So I wonder if there's actually a video of the fight or not. Let's see here.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, beautiful.
Skip to 45 seconds in.
All right.
Or 40 seconds in.
Here we go. Oh, yeah, he definitely, he turns.
Peppered him.
He walks away. Oh, he's wearing a shirt with his name on it. Thank God, this will make it easy. Oop, 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 oop. By the way, if you are listening to this later, you should check out this clip because they are throwing hands. All right, they're trying to split them up now. They're trying to separate them. I've lost Masvidal. I can't see his shirt anymore. He is not visible. There he is, hidden back there. Oh, don't approach him like that, you dummy. Yeah, he's got. Oh, he's cut up, man.
Yeah, he busted his cheek open.
Busted his cheek open. God, can you imagine getting hit that hard? That's gotta hurt. Well, let that be a lesson, folks. Don't go into other pressers and talk shit, because you will.
How ESPN
get hit?
Yeah. What about ESPN feels now they're in bed with this company?
I don't know. Maybe they hope it makes them a lot of money. Now, Masvidal later told ESPN that he only reacted after Edwards raised his hand. So the video, which we just watched and you can check out again, twitch.tv/Schwarzenegger. But the video seems to show both men's hands coming up at the same time. Either way, Masvidal's blows open a cut on Edwards' face. Edwards was treated in the arena. Local police briefly investigated, but Edwards declined to press charges. You know what? Good on him, because he started it. and as Masvidal told it, this hooligan threatened him, so he gave him the three-piece with the soda. And
it is the opinion of this court that the plaintiff got what he deserved.
Totally agree.
Case dismissed.
Case dismissed. Let's move on. Dana White, who's in charge of the UFC, was outraged by the spectacle, or at least he says he was, saying he can't even believe that this happened. We need to do a much better job of making sure this shit doesn't happen at any of our events.
Yeah, now that there's actually respectable companies involved with his UFC.
Yeah, no kidding. I feel like it used to be way more respectable than it is now. I don't know what happened. Has it always been this way? Or am I wrong? Again, I'm not insulting it. I'm just saying, like, has it always been a little bit more of the Wild West?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay.
It's totally been the Wild West.
I just haven't followed it at all. Like, it just, I don't know.
I remember when it first started, it was totally the Wild West.
Really?
Yeah, like, they would even let their guys, you know, go on professional wrestling shows and wear their belts on the wrestling shows and sort of let them do whatever. It was totally just do whatever you can to get eyes on the product.
Yeah, I guess it worked.
Yep. And now ESPN forked over hundreds of millions of dollars to them.
All right. Last one here on Quick Hits. This story is one that made Daryl and I smile. But I have to admit, I'm a little bit saddened because I think what would have made this story even better is if the person had actually been there. Let's talk about Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Smith was out of town, but a bird, a turkey vulture to be specific, apparently, attacked a window. Well, he attacked an office window at ESPN headquarters, and it happened to be Stephen A. Smith's window. He, like, smashed through it. The glass was hammered away. And the bird, like, went into the room, and animal control was trying to lure out the bird. Like, come here, birdie, come here, you know.
Vultures do not have a syrinx, so they just kind of.
Oh, that's terrible.
They can only do that. They can only grunt. Don't have vocal cords.
Trey Wingo describes it. He says, so a turkey vulture has crashed through a window into the office of one Stephen A. Smith here on campus, currently sitting in there staring out the window, contemplating his fate. This is actually happening right now. So, yeah, there's pictures of, like, So it's a second story office. The bird had landed. It wasn't like the lowest window on the rung, right? It was like the next window up, and it went through like midway. And it and it happened to be Stephen A. Smith's office. Now, the only thing that would have made it better is if he'd been in there, because I know that Stephen A. Smith is rolling on himself at almost all times because he's thinking of the next great thing he can say and bring to First Take, which is a show that he hosts alongside with Kellerman. What the hell is Max Kellerman?
Max Kellerman.
Yeah, a guy who is nowhere near as unlikable as Skip Bayless, though he's trying.
He's trying. He tries.
God help
the
man. He does his best to be hated. Ooh, doggy. Stephen A. Smith has never been a guy who's tried to be hated. He is just hated because he... I like him better now, but I used to think he was the biggest idiot because he hated the Spurs so much and he refused to call them a dynasty. And then I think one year, I think when the Spurs won in like 07, he's like, okay, it's a dynasty. But he was like a New York radio, sports radio guy who thought he knew everything and has an East Coast bias about that stuff. And just, like, so for me as a Spurs fan, it really pissed me off. And then he got on First Take with Skip Bayless, so you put two loudmouthed idiots together who are often wrong about everything.
Yeah.
And the thing that drives me crazy is Skip Bayless is a fan of the Cowboys and the Spurs. So it's like, well, fuck me, right? I get to sit here and listen to him, and I actually agree with him sometimes. What is wrong with me? But anyway, Stephen A. Smith was out of the office. He tweeted, damn, even a turkey is that depressed from seeing that I'm gone from Bristol. Hoping it doesn't harm itself. And he put the little prayer sign. The emoji, the prayer emoji. Like, oh, Stephen, it's a turkey vulture.
Yep. By the way, Nick, turkey vulture is one of my favorite birds.
Why is that?
I even have a plush turkey vulture that I keep with me in my office, and his name's Tolly.
Tolly?
Tolly.
Why Tolly?
Because that's a nickname for Cicero.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
And there was a wrestler named Tolly Blanchard.
Okay, yeah. Well. Yeah.
From San Antonio.
Okay, that's all right, yeah.
And so some fun facts about turkey vultures. So, one... Turkey vultures, actually, if you look at a turkey vulture, you'll notice that they have a nose.
Oh, that's horrific.
So they have a nose. It, like, sticks out right in front of their beaks in between their eyes. You know where your nose usually is. And you can actually see all the way through it because they don't have a septum.
Oh.
So you can look through their nose to the other side.
Oh,
and
God,
they're actually, and they're, did you see a picture, Nick?
Yeah. Ugh.
So they're actually one of the few birds that has a good sense of smell.
No.
Most birds have almost no sense of smell.
No.
And they use their eyesight. Turkey vultures can smell for long distances, over a mile. And actually, other vultures who can't smell, the black vultures, will follow them because they know that they can smell carcasses.
Well, that's a little extra on Quick Hits.
There's a little extra. So, turkey vulture, one of my favorite birds, and they call them turkey vultures because they have red heads.
Oh.
And when they're walking around with their wings folded, they look like turkeys.
No. I guess I never thought of that. Well,
so that's how they got their name. And usually they just glide in the winds. That probably would happen to this turkey vulture.
Glide.
You found an updraft and then it swung him into a building and wasn't much he could do about it.
Kind of sad, but also a little funny at the same time.
Yeah, they're just gliders. They can't really.
Hey, I just watched a replay of the last Spurs possession in regulation. What the hell was DeMar DeRozan thinking?
Yeah, that's like three games. The one against Toronto, where they blew it. Also in the Rockets game, he had a really bad possession that ended up costing them the game. And now this one.
Well, that was just like, you got one shot. I didn't even like the look he had.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're the guy. I'm trying to get a better look, man.
Yeah. Well, those other two were just turnovers before he even got a shot up.
There were a couple that were a little questionable, but they also did not call the foul on the other end, so it was something I respected, at least. They ended up keeping it.
I'll post a picture of my stuffed vulture.
Oh yeah, please do.
So follow, if you want that, you can find it at D Joe Walson. That's DJOWALSEN at Twitter. And you can also see me cursing about whatever sports game I'm watching at the time.
It's true.
And other shallow musings.
Shallow musings are the best musings in life, my friend. Don't ever forget it. All right, folks. Well, with that, I want to say thank you so much for watching. And if you're listening to this later, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, please tell your friends. Give us a like. Give us a subscribe. And let us know what you think. Don't forget to check out the live tapings every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. on twitch.tv/Schwarzenegger. Daryl, it was a lot of fun, man. Thanks.
Yep.
We'll get back to
it.
Yeah,
it was
week.
It was really nice for me to be here.
I appreciate me being here as well.
Yeah, Nick. You know what, Nick, I didn't regret blocking this time out.
Good. I'm glad that we could all agree. All right, folks. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, we'll be streaming a little bit more this weekend. We'll see what we can do. Daryl was talking about streaming tomorrow as well, but we'll see how he feels. So, thanks again for watching/listening, and we'll talk to you later. All right.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.